is a few of you may know that we have some epic entrepreneurs, not only right here in our city, but right here in our community at Crossroads. One of those is Steve Smith. I'm kind of a big fan of his. He is the CEO of Model Group, which has basically done about $231 million in development right here in our city, over 286 buildings. And in fact, if you've been in Over the Rhine, I live in Northside, you've seen some of the impact that his company has made wherever you see restoration happening in the city. He just won a local, or actually a national award for eco-friendly building. So let's check out what this pretty amazing guy has to teach us today. Glad you're here.
The mission of our company is to transform neighborhoods. And what we tend to do is go into neighborhoods where something is broken. Either the market is broken, or there's blight, there's disinvestment, and figure out what will it take to not just bring this neighborhood back, but to transform it into something that is vibrant and something that is sustainable for all different types of people. We wanted to create spaces that we would be proud to own and people would be proud to live in. And so we could have done it much cheaper, and frankly, it would have been a lot easier, but it wouldn't have been transformational. And many of the neighborhoods that we work in would still be struggling right now. And now, these neighborhoods are, we've preserved the affordable housing that's there, and so low-income people can still live there, but the entire neighborhood around them is just blossoming. And so there are businesses, there are restaurants, there are safe places for people to shop and people to eat. And it's a whole different experience. We've renovated now over 160 historic buildings. The problem was that we were wanting to do something that the market wouldn't support. So when you talk to a traditional lender and you say, here's what we want to do, they say those numbers don't work, and they're right. And so when we went to find investors, we had to find folks who were interested in preserving low-income housing, and that was somehow part of their mission. But what we wanted to do was put a twist on it and said, what if we did affordable housing? What if we preserved low-income housing, but we did it in a way that was indistinguishable from market rate housing? Now, the interesting thing about that is that there was almost no market rate housing in the neighborhood at the time. And so we were sort of imagining, if there was market rate housing, how would that look? When many people think about risk, they think of everything that can go wrong if I do this, right? So it's, if I take some step, what could go wrong? Well, the honest answer is you have no idea. But the question that people forget is, what happens if I do nothing? If your fear of failure is based on movement, then that presupposes that your default position is to do nothing. For me, it was, well, what happens if I do nothing? Well, there is a neighborhood that potentially continues to be blighted and full of crime. For other folks, it might be, I'm trapped in a job for the next 25 years that I hate. And so I think asking the question a different way, that what's the cost or what's the risk of doing nothing, sort of gets you out of that inertia or that default mode of presupposing that the risk is always in moving. To me, there's just as much risk in doing nothing. I have never learned anything from the successes that I've had. It's always the failures. That's where the growth comes. And so I've never been lucky enough to have an idea that just took off. For me, it was, I had an idea, I tried, I found out it was a terrible idea, but I learned something, and then I tried something else. And so it's like iteration after iteration after iteration. To the extent that I can, I try to pause and be present and celebrate whenever we have a win. But I'm always in motion, and I'm always excited about what else can we do and what's next.
Good stuff. We started week one in the whole series, looking at how God is in the new over 4,400 times in the Bible. The word new is there, and how we have to embrace the new if we want to understand more about God. Last week, we looked at the broader set of the picture of God does new things in team, and we need to have pioneers, and we need to have settlers. And this week, we're going to look at what happens when you are afraid, specifically afraid of failure. You know, failure is a definite option, the Harvard Business Review some time ago found out that 95% of all new businesses will fail if you define failure as meeting the growth expectations of the owner. 70 to 80% of all businesses will fail if you define failure as giving the promised return on investment to initial investors. And 40% of all businesses will fail if you define failure as never making money for the investors. It's certainly true that doing a new thing brings with it a possibility that things might not go forward. But yet, there's so many voices in our culture today that are always about fear, always about don't do it, always about not trying something new or risky, that we're choosing to err on the side of looking at the risk side of what God does to ask us to step out in faith. So before we go any further, let's pray. God, thank you for the ability to talk about this topic. I know it's important to us. To every person who has any venture, whether it's a business venture, a family venture, a friendship venture, a hobby venture, it is important. And most importantly, it's important to know you, to know these ideas that have been birthed in your heart. So help me to be clear and helpful today. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. Book of 2 Timothy, chapter 1, verse 7 says this: "For God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power, of love, of self-control." God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power, of love, of self-control. So oftentimes, the discussion about whether we should try something new or not centers on being afraid. And how many people in here are fearful people? Fearful, just raise your hand. Wow, honest. Yeah, good for you. Wow, I didn't expect anybody to raise their hand. Awesomeness. Now, a lot of people who say, no, I'm not fearful, if I actually ask you, well, do you worry? Well, of course I worry. That's fear. Do you struggle with stress? Oh, yeah, I get stressed out. That's fear. Are you paranoid? Yes. Well, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me. So, yes, I do. I mean, these are all nicer phrases for fear. And all of us are going to have some sense of fear. I mean, if I'm at a river and I know there's a crocodile in the river, I will have fear about whether or not I should go across the river. That's actually a healthy fear. Sometimes our fear is adequate. But if you are somebody who could be said, I have a spirit of fear, a spirit of worry, a spirit of stress, this is a personality characteristic that does not come from God. Because God gives personality characteristics that are on love, of power, of self-control. So when we feel fear, one of three responses: cease, caution, or Christ. Cease. Stop. Maybe the fear you have is telling you don't go across the river. Just stop is a bad idea. Maybe it is possible. You have a fear, and guess what? Maybe you're not the entrepreneurial start a new business type. Cease. Number two, caution. Caution. It could be that this fear is telling me I need to get advisors or counselors around me who know me or know the situation better than I do. And there's a lot of stuff that focuses on the cease and the caution. These are the default modes in our society. But today, I'm spending the rest of our time on the Christ aspect, which is to say this: if there's something that I'm afraid of, if there's something that I am churning inside about, that might be the exact place where Jesus is and the exact place where he is wooing and calling you to follow him. Anytime you're going to do something new, you're going to be fearful. A new job, you're going to be fearful. A new date, you're going to be fearful. A new character quality, you're going to be fearful. A new march across the street to the neighbor you've been fighting with to actually do a new thing of try to restore any sort of respect with one another, you are going to be fearful. Fear is always with the new. And we've already established that God is in the new, so we've got to get comfortable with being with God and having some semblance of fear and processing it properly. I mean, some of us saw that WizKids video. I can't watch that WizKids video without boo-hooing. I'm like, so good. Some of us are sitting there going, man, I'd like to do that. I don't know. I'm kind of afraid. What if I get a kid who doesn't like me? What if there's a three-syllable word I don't know, I can't pronounce? Well, I don't, you know. Hey, that fear is something where you can say no. You say no to ceasing, say no to caution, say, Christ could meet me in the midst of this fear to do a new thing. We heard the call for hosts, small group hosts for the journey. And there's fear in the unknown, and a lot of us are going, oh, man, what if What if I invite people to my house and they're weird? What if, you know, what if someone has bed bugs in their clothing or something? I don't know. What if this? Oh, I shouldn't have said that, because now you're all thinking, oh, I never thought of that one. That's exactly the reason I needed not to do that. No, I'm telling you. God is calling, I believe, 2,400 people at all three sites of Crossroads to do this, and all of us are going to have some sense of trepidation. Now, Jesus dealt straightforward with fear and actually inviting somebody into a fearful situation. It's a classic story. Let's take a look at it. It comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 14. Immediately, he, Jesus, made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And they said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Jesus has been doing amazing new things. Crowds have been around him because they want to see and hear and sense the power of God. And Jesus sends the disciples over on the other side of the lake, and he goes up on a hillside. Maybe he's tapping into his inner introvert. He just wants to be away from people, or maybe it's just a healthy thing of he wants to connect with God one-on-one. He's up there, and late at night, he decides to go back over. Excuse me. Had a little tea leaf in there. He decides to go back over and catch up with his friends. So they are out in the middle of the lake, in the middle of the night, and he decides to go and meet them. He decides to walk on the water to meet them. This is a very strange decision on his part. Some would say, well, what's so strange about it at all? I mean, I was taught that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So obviously, that's the tact he wanted. Yes, yes, I know that. But and I know Jesus can do supernatural things, but why would he do this supernatural thing? I mean, if you wanted to do a supernatural thing to meet up with the disciples, you could have done a Star Trek beam me up thing and just arrived in the boat, bam, here I am. He could have sprinted at 60 miles an hour around the shore to meet up the boat. He could have done more than that. Why does he do something that specifically freaks out his disciples? They are afraid. They are afraid. In fact, they're seeing something they've never seen before. It's a new thing. Never seen anyone walking on water. And so they assume it's a ghost. It's something that's immaterial. They're totally freaking out. They don't know how to process it. And Peter is the only one who actually talks and tries to engage in the midst of the fear. He says, if it's you, ask me to come. So what is fear? Number three, three things. Number one, fear is a sign of vulnerability. It's a sign of vulnerability. This is why we don't like fear, is because we feel vulnerable. We don't have the assets. It's vulnerable to start something new. We have fears about going in the ocean, many of us, in any kind of deep water. Why is that? We feel vulnerable. Why a shark? We don't know what's down there, and we know if there is a shark, he will win every single time. Every time. Fear makes us feel vulnerable. I've mentioned that Liv and I are in a good spot of having some weekly time of prayer on Saturday mornings. We have a little block that we do, and it's not a lot, but it's more regularly scheduled prayer than we've actually ever done. And I've thought a lot about this, interact with people. It's hard to find anybody who's married or anybody who is dating who would say, I have a good prayer life with the person who's important to me. Very, very few couples actually pray together on any level of regularity. And I think the reason is because there's fear there. Why? Because when you pray with someone, if it's going to be power and effective prayer, there has to be vulnerability. I mean, you can only pray so many times. God, I pray for world peace and all the kids with malaria and help the Bengals win today. Amen. You can only do... And those are fine prayers. Those are fine prayers. I'm not saying we shouldn't pray those prayers, but those prayers will not motivate us to get praying, and we won't actually see things that we can tangibly and tactilely feel. You've got to start praying things where you're confessing things in front of somebody. You're asking for things that reveal the motives of your heart. And this is the reason why we tend not to pray, not because we don't want to take the time. It's a very vulnerable thing, and we're actually afraid of it. And God regularly provokes people to the scary places because we will be vulnerable, and in the vulnerability, we will need to lean into God. In the vulnerability, we will need Him instead of the resource that we have. Because guess what? If we have all the resources, guess what? You will not be afraid. You're never vulnerable when you have all the resources and everything that you need. It's those areas of faith that God calls us and puts us into. This is why you see throughout the scriptures, hero after hero is afraid. And it's not that they have a spirit of fear, that they live all day in fear, but they come up to situations where they don't have the resources and they're going, Let's look at a few. One is a guy by the name of Joshua, a warrior leader, and I assume he was a manly man, but nonetheless, he was afraid because he and the nation of Israel had never actually gone to inhabit their own territory, the promised land. Here's what it says in Joshua 8:1. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear, do not be dismayed. Take all the fighting men with you, arise and go up." Joshua was afraid. You can feel fear and God still be asking you to do that and to go in that direction. Actually, fear not necessarily be a bad thing. What's bad is whether or not we go to the new thing. Because the new thing is always new and it's vulnerable and we'll be afraid. Another example is a guy by the name of Nehemiah. He garnished some resources and got people to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem. No one had ever done that before. It was a new thing. Felt very vulnerable and people tried to sidetrack them through fear. Nehemiah 6 verse 8 puts it this way. "For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands." So look, he's fearful. They're fearful. They're being tempted with fear. And what's the cause? It caused them to lean into God. So they don't cease. They're not more cautious. They lean into Christ. They lean into God. Another new thing that happens. New things always bring fear. As I said it before, I'll say it again. Joseph finds out his wife is pregnant. That's a new thing. He's going to be a first-time dad. And it's really new. She got pregnant by God. Yeah, it's hard to believe. He didn't believe it either at first. He has a supernatural encounter with God where it goes this way. "Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit." He feels very vulnerable. Don't be afraid. He and God got more intense and intimate as a result of working through this fear. My friend John Ortberg says this in his book, You Gotta Get Out of the Boat. There is always fear. God has an inextinguishable habit of asking people to do things that are scary to them. If you want to be close with God, you have to be willing to be scared. If you want to experience all of God's fullness, you must start to get comfortable. We must start to get comfortable with feeling vulnerable, feeling uncomfortable, feeling fearful, because these are the places that God invites us in. So let's continue on with our story. What happens is the 12 disciples are afraid inside the boat. Peter answered, "Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water." Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, walked on the water, and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Peter starts to focus on things other than Christ. He is sitting in this boat, and Jesus says, he kind of aggressively says to him, "Hey, if it's you, ask me to come to you." Jesus says, "Okay, yes, absolutely. Come to me right now." And we can just kind of imagine him kind of going, "Really? Really? All right." So holding on to the side of the boat and putting a foot. Is it holding me? It's holding me. And then getting the other one up and coming all the way over and like, and just kind of feeling that. My goodness, I think that he was afraid. I think there was fear. And the question is, what is he going to focus on? We can learn something from this man right here in terms of where our focus should be. Peter did learn to walk with his fear. He did. He had to say, with the emotions that I have to go forward. See, what fear does is it wants us to take our focus off of God. Fear sidetracks focus. Fear sidetracks focus. As Peter gets outside of the boat, what do you know? What do you know? I'm standing. And he's focused because Jesus has just invited him out. He says, if it's you, invite me to come. That's his confidence boost. He knows if he and God are okay, things are going to be better than if he only operated on his own resources. So he's walking. He's focused on Christ. He's walking. But it says as soon as he notices the wind, he takes his focus, it sidetracks his focus, and that's the moment where he starts to sink. And this is the thing about fear. It's not that we feel a knot in our stomach that's bad. It's not that we can't sleep some nights that's necessarily bad. It's that it sidetracks us from God because we focus on the thing that God doesn't want us to focus on instead of focusing on God himself. Entrepreneur after entrepreneur would say that it's the fear of failure that drives them. And in some ways, I understand that. But on the other hand, man, the fear of failure shouldn't be our driver. That should not be our focus. Sometimes we'll do things and that just won't work. But even in the midst of those things, we're going to see in a moment, Peter was getting developed even in the midst of his failure as he sinks. He takes his eyes off Jesus. He sinks. He was being spiritually developed. I have a friend of mine who has a very successful startup business, and he had two previous failures. And he says, well, I'm not sure that I call them failures. They're stepping stones. They're things I learned, stepping stones get me to where I am right now. Jonas Falk, thankfully, he didn't fear failure. He had 200 failed experiments to get the immunization for polio. He was asked by a reporter one time what it felt like to fail 200 times, and he said this, I never failed 200 times in my life. I was taught not to use the word failure. I just discovered 200 ways how not to vaccinate for polio. Thomas Edison, who was constantly inventing new things, said, I've not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that will not work. Now, I'm not saying we should redefine what failure means. I'm just saying we should have failure in its proper place and say failure is not the worst thing that could happen to me. The worst thing that could happen to me if I want to track with God is I take my eyes off of God. I have to be willing to go where he wants me and walk the way that he wants me to walk. Fear is the smell of opportunity. It's the smell of opportunity. Makes us feel vulnerable. It sidetracks us to get us off mission, but it's also the smell of opportunity. Smell that? Some people smell fear. If you can smell fear, there's an opportunity many times right behind that fear. Because, see, the reason why people are afraid of it is because no one's done it, or you haven't done it. And if no one's done it, or you haven't done it, there may be things that are waiting there that God's going to bless you with as a result of you focusing on him. Fear is the smell of opportunity. I mean, we know person after person who did strange things and hit it big and financially. I mean, you've got Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, they had amazing educations. And they saw some piece of technology, and other people saw it too, but they said, no, I got to wait till I get done with college. They smelled the opportunity, and they made a major, major jump. I'll tell you what, if there's somebody you're seeing that has similar values to you, you're smelling perhaps the opportunity of what a great relationship could be like, but perhaps you're just fearful because your parents were divorced, and you know you don't know anybody who's happily married, or people are always trashing it, and you're a little bit afraid about it. Hey, there might be an opportunity just on the other side. I tell you what, I don't know anybody who feels that they want to adopt or foster that doesn't have a level of fear. It's an opportunity to round out your life and bless somebody else in an incredibly significant way. I remember when we first came to Cincinnati, we were invited to come, and I'd done interviews, I'd visited here once, and finally the call came from 11 people, said, hey, we'd like you to come, we're going to guarantee your salary for a year. These were not rich people, these were, I think the oldest person was 31 or something like that. We want you to come, and we'd like you to do this. I was like, oh, man. When I hung up the phone after the offer came, I found out that there's all these phrases that are grounded to biological reality. Like, he got cold feet. My cold were freaking freezing. For 2 days, I'm wrapping Afghans around my feet. Honestly, the blood supply to my feet was cold. I was cold. I found out this other phrase, he was scared somethingless. I don't know if you ever heard about this. I was. For 2 days, I couldn't take a dump. It was ridiculous. Honestly, I was all bound up. The idea of going to this new thing, I had people telling me, don't do that. It's not, you can't leave this to go there. You don't know those people. You don't do this. But Libby had the spiritual sanity to say, honey, you can't pass this opportunity. We can't pass this opportunity up. See, what other people would find fearful, and I did find fearful, the fear was connected with the new, and at the same time, it was the smell of opportunity. This is one of the reasons why a personal credo of mine, and if you work any length of time with me, you'll hear it, make aggressive mistakes. Now, actually, the best thing is not make any mistakes at all. I'm not pro-mistakes, but I am knowing that all of us are going to make mistakes, and I've just found if I'm going to make a mistake, I want to make it on the aggressive side instead of the passive side. In fact, my passive mistakes are the ones I regret the most. Let me share a couple of them with you. One of them is, it didn't necessarily affect my life, but it bothers me still to this day. Libby and I were driving to a relative's wedding in 1988 in Pennsylvania, and we ran out of gas on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, because back in the days where we just had virtually no money, we were always running our needle to E, and we got caught. So we're in the middle of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, no cell phones, what do we do? Well, you got to walk someplace, because I see no place where there's civilization. But it looked like there was maybe something beyond this patch of trees. So got out of the car, left Lib with the car, went over the deep grass, went through the trees, and sure enough, there was this old white farmhouse that probably was there before the turnpike was actually constructed. It was ancient. A wood was crackling off it. I thought someone was there, but I wasn't sure. I start walking around the side, and there's this really odd, like, horse courtyard with all these stables that are in a U, and the house is in the center of this. And this big German shepherd starts trotting out to see me. Good news was, someone was here. Bad news is, a German shepherd's here. At that point, that was fear for me. I mean, I had a paper route, and I had a German shepherd that would bite on me regularly while I was delivering papers. So I'm like, oh, nice doggy. He sniffed, and he seemed okay. His name was Major. That's his name. His name was Major. I found that out because I went around and knocked on the door, and this old guy answers, and I said, I'm sorry, my car's broken down. Do you have a phone? I can call for help. He says, sure. I go in his house, and it's like walking into an antique warehouse. It's like stepping back in time. It wasn't a new thing in the house. It was all really classy stuff. Go into a kitchen. Off the kitchen, there's this little room where the original phone would have been, one of those old McFeely phones. You go, ring, 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 ring. Mabel, ring. And one of those things, except it had a little rotary dial. And I'm sitting there, and I'm calling. Hey, he had this thing called a phone book. I don't know if you ever heard of these things. There were these pieces of paper that were stacked up about yo-hi, and they were bound together. I had to look up a number. I'm calling. As I'm calling, I look at the walls in this thing. I'm seeing pictures of Babe Ruth. Another picture of Harry Truman, and a bunch of people I didn't even know. It's one of my favorite biographies. I keep saying his name wrong. Harry Truman and a bunch of people being photoed right beside a bomber. All these historic figures, and some of these figures, there was a guy in there that was young that probably looked the way this guy would have looked when he was young. I don't know. These were all one-off photos. This guy's personal photos. And then I got help, and I said, thank you very much, and I left. And this guy, I go, why did I not ask him, excuse me, sir, can you tell me the story behind these pictures? Tell me a little about your history. He probably would have loved to talk. I think I was with the giant of history, and I have no idea who he was or what his stories were. It was a passive mistake. I don't make that mistake anymore. I want to ask people things. It was a passive mistake. Another passive mistake we made was waiting for our third child. We had a plan. We were going to have three kids, and so we had the first one, second one. Then we started Crossroads, and we said, we have another thing we're starting. Let's just hold off the third kid. And that was a mistake, not having the third, but waiting till the third. We should have kept them going every two-year increments, because once it was a five-year increment, I got lazy. I was like, oh, man. And she has different memories than the other kids, and it would have been a really rough run, but holistically, I think it was a passive mistake. We've had over 17 years of Crossroads, some amazing staff members come and leave, amazing. And we've had some that have been not so amazing, who I should have invited them off of staff. sooner. Sooner. Passive mistakes of having people stay past their productivity and helpfulness, to invite them to someplace else. Passive mistakes are always the ones that bother me. Aggressive mistakes, I've had some aggressive mistakes, but they're a bit different. Now, let me share one of our aggressive mistakes that we've had here as a church a number of years ago. We said, let's stop doing Christmas Eve services. Let's try a show. Let's write our own Christmas show. Do our own music, do the own script, the whole thing. And we had the show, it was called Imagine. Imagine, anybody remember Imagine? Yeah, no one's clapping. Yeah, oh yeah, you are clapping, yes. Oh my gosh, it was awful. It was awful. You had to be really artsy and really abstract to see God in that at all. I mean, we got over, we went, gosh, we didn't even mention Jesus. This is Christmas Eve. We probably should have done that. It was weird. It was weird. But you know what? Well, you know, we took a run at something. Some people liked it. Most people did. I was getting emails of, what the heck was that? It was an aggressive mistake, but I tell you what, aggressive mistakes are things you learn from and you grow from. This aggressive mistake was what led to what you might have heard of called Awaited. Had we not had Imagine, we wouldn't have every year 40 to 50,000 people blessed with a unique thing that's affecting a lot of lives. South Africa was an aggressive mistake. Put a lot of money into one partner in South Africa, only one, and made even more commitment to it. And then we realized before we spent the next slug of money, this was a mistake, and we needed to stop it, and we stopped it. And it was a mistake to be vested in only one partner, but we learned a lot through that. There was money that blessed other lives with it, but we also learned from it and actually built to where we have two great partners right now, one of them, Topsy Foundation. As a result of learning from that aggressive mistake, we had different partnerships, and we now, every month, we keep over 2,000 people alive and thriving who have AIDS. And it comes from the things that we learned in our previous mistake. Teaching load was another aggressive move we've made. I mean, sometimes we've had people on stage over the last 17 years that haven't been all that good. It's been an aggressive decision to make, and sometimes it was a mistake. We started the church, people said to me, Brian, whatever you do, church needs a mouthpiece, needs consistency in the stage. You need to be on that stage every week. If you start getting tired, just delegate off staff stuff, delegate off management stuff, delegate off being involved in budget discussions because you need to just kind of be the face and this and that. And I was thought, gosh, I wouldn't be healthy for me. It wouldn't be healthy for a church to just hear from one person. So we did the aggressive things of introducing different people, even when I was healthy and around, different mouthpieces. And there were some times where it was a mistake. We'd have one person, and we go, yeah, you're not doing that again. And then there's other times we have somebody, and we realize, but there's something there. Let's give him another shot, or let's give her another shot. And we kept developing. And now we have a healthy culture where we're not dependent on any one voice. That's a healthy and godly thing, and it came from the attitude of I'm trying to encourage you this time. Don't allow your fear to make you passive. Do not allow your fear to make you passive. Be aggressive, because where the fear is, there may be Jesus, and he is asking you to be aggressive. We're right now talking about Peter, because he made an aggressive move and got out of the boat and started walking. Yes, perhaps it was a mistake to look at the wind and he sunk, but it worked out okay for him in the end, didn't it? He made an aggressive move. Guess who we're not talking about? The 11 passive weenies in the boat. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's nothing in the Bible that says, and then John said, wow, what's he think he's doing? There's nowhere people are thinking about Thomas, and then Thomas said, I doubt that's going to work out well for him. And then another passive guy's in there scratching himself. That's not an enemy. Who are these? No one cares about these people. They're making a passive move. They're not experiencing, and they're not learning and growing the way Peter is. Now, this is my personal opinion. I think that the reason why Peter is mentioned so much in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of the New Testament, is because he makes aggressive moves, and I believe it's one of the reasons why Peter is regularly seen with Jesus in an inner circle. He's absolutely one of the favorites. No question he is. And I think a reason why he's a favorite is because he He's aggressive. He's aggressive. See, Jesus is aggressive. He goes from life in the cosmos, in the heavens, and he makes an aggressive move, honoring his heavenly Father by coming down to earth. It's an aggressive move. He's teaching aggressive teachings that are making people go, what? Who are you? You can't say that. He's touching people who have diseases. People are afraid that they're going to get sick, and he's aggressively touching them. He's aggressively healing. And here we have Peter over and over. Here's one aggressive move he makes. Another time, Jesus says, who do people say that I am? And everyone's doing the, well, some people say this. Well, some people don't. That's what passive people say all the time. Well, I'm just hearing that people are saying, who? Give a name, passive weenie. Who? Who said? Well, just some people are saying that. Well, I just hear. Jesus says, who do you say that I am? Peter says, I say you're the Christ. That's who I say you are. Jesus said, man, that aggressive move, that statement, that is the foundational statement upon which I build my church. And he did this all the time. Peter was one of the first to aggressively leave his business to be a disciple, to leave and do that. Peter was the one when he's out in the boat and Jesus calls from the shore and says, hey, put your nets on the other side of the boat. All the rest of them are passively murmuring and thinking to themselves, who does this guy think he is? We're the fishermen. It's the end of the day. They're just kind of doing the passive thing. Peter's the only one who aggressively says what everyone's thinking and murmuring. He says, Jesus, we've been out all day. We've been out all day. I understand fishing. You don't. I mean, but you know what? If you say so, you know, I'll do. What do you know? Amazing catch. Amazing catch. Peter is the guy who, when Jesus is arrested, all the other passive people are going, oh, no. Peter pulls out a sword and chops the dude's ear off. I don't think Jesus necessarily approved of it. He pulled the guy's ear up and stuck it back on his head. But again, it's the character quality that Peter has. I'm doing something. In the midst of fear, when others are cowering, I'm going forward. Jesus goes and he dies. He rises from the dead. Crazy, amazing stuff. I'd love to have a whole series right now to unpack all this stuff for us. But he comes back from the dead. He visits the disciples. They're on a boat. And he recreates another scene of putting your nets on the other side of the boat. They don't expect they're going to see him again. All of a sudden, it clicks with Peter. Oh, my goodness. He said, everyone gets it. Peter's the one who jumps in the water and goes to the shore. Oh, my goodness. Never thought of it until just now. Again, he's getting out of the boat and getting in the water. Again. If he sinks or not, if he sinks or not, he's going to where Jesus is. God's asking us to embrace our fear and aggressively go forward. You are likely to not regret, in the grand scheme of things, mistakes that were made because you were moving. Mark Twain said this, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bowline, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. The great ending to this story with Peter and Jesus is the response of the other 11. It says this in verse 33. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you're the Son of God. This is when you know that someone has overcome fear and someone's being bold, not for their own esteem, not for their own resume, not for their own notoriety, but for the notoriety of God, that these guys are not drawn to Peter and his aggressiveness. They're drawn to the power of God. But guess what? People can't see the power of God. They can't see the hope of God. They can't see the love of God unless somebody goes to where God is. And that is in the new and the unknown places that the aggressive will take. This whole week I've been having a song. It's been on my mind as I've been preparing this. It's been marinating my mind. And then last minute yesterday, I thought, gosh, maybe I ought to ask the band to do that song. And they pulled it together last minute. It's an ancient song. 1773 is when it was written. It's older than our country. And it tells about those who are walking with God and yet have fears and are leaning into the mysterious ways of God. So we're going to do this song right now. And then after we sit in the midst of it, we're going to have the ability to participate. But even if you can't follow some of the melody lines, I want us to soak in the words. And God, I pray that as We soak in these words that you would speak to us the way you've been speaking to me all week with this song. I look forward to you getting your fearful saints to do the mysterious, aggressive things that are new that you want us to do. Use this song. God, I pray for those in here right now who are fearful. We're fearful about whether or not to ask that person out. Give them courage. Pray for he or she who is fearful about ending the dysfunctional relationship. Help them go forward in the new place and end the relationship. Pray right now for that woman who is being asked to go to the new place of starting an enterprise that hasn't been imagined yet. Help her walk out in fear. I pray for the man who is being called right now and invited to invest in children. When other men are not thinking this way, they're being called. Help them to not lose focus and step out. God, I pray for a person here who the most courageous, aggressive thing that they can do is stay in the job that they're in right now, hitting the same nail over and over again when others drop away. God, I pray for the family that is going to do the new and aggressive thing in the midst of fear by adopting, by fostering, by nurturing and tutoring. God, have your way with these fearful saints who are called to new aggressive moves. Help us to see the cloud and the unique blessing that may be inside of it, but only as we walk.